So for the season of Lent, we will again follow the Revised Common Lectionary. Terry and I have had this discussion, this Revised Common Lectionary. It is, and we've talked about this even here in the church in the past. This isn't a Catholic thing. In fact, the Revised Common Lectionary is the Protestant lectionary. That's what it is. It is a way that the church schedules kind of its reading of the scriptures so that we don't miss voices within the scriptures. You'll notice that in the lectionary, as you read along, there's rarely any quotes or things from the apocryphal books, which are the books that are that usually kind of fall between the New and the or the Old and the New Testament, and are additional books in the Catholic Bible. We don't see those in the lectionary. But the point of the Revised Common Lectionary is it started in about the 70s, and it was churches that really wanted to hear from all the voices of the Scriptures, from the New Testament, from the Old Testament, from the writers of the letters to the wisdom of the Psalms and Proverbs. And so the lectionary was set up as a way for the churches to structure its worship to hear from those all those voices on any given Sunday. So when you go through, and if you want to, you're welcome to again follow this through the Vanderbilt University website, and they have the Revised Common Lectionary. And you can do everything from read the same, you can read passages every day, or you can just read the Revised Common Lectionary. And there is always an Old Testament lesson. There is always a lesson from, or a reading, an Old Testament reading. A reading from the Psalms. There is generally a reading from one of the three synoptic Gospels. Synoptic means that they all three have, they follow a similar, they're arranged similar and follow the same similar patterns of history of Jesus' life. And then finally, there's always a reading from one of the epistles. Now, over 3 years, and the reason, by the way, they do three is because Matthew, Mark, and Luke. The Gospel of John doesn't read like all the other Gospels. And so what they've done in the Revised Common Lectionary is instead of trying to fit that in because they want to give John its fair shake, John is then just sprinkled in as a Gospel reading throughout the Revised Common Lectionary. So for all 3 years, you'll find readings from John interspersed. So as we begin Lent, I invite you to go out and go to Vanderbilt University and look it up on my personal calendar at my office, and the one I use daily. I have the Revised Common Lectionary readings that pop up on my calendar. I actually put it so that it comes into my calendar. And it's sometimes it's the way I do my own devotional reading, is I read from the lectionary. It's a chance to get out of reading in my own favorite books, because I have my own favorite books. I love to read Job, of all the things. I love to read Job. I love the language in Job. I love the way that God really shows his both his authority, but also his compassion. And I have favorite books in the New Testament too. 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John are some of my favorites because John really dives deep into what it means to love. And it's something that I continue to want to live and improve on. But if I'm not careful, I just read those all the time. So by following something like the lectionary, I'm being forced to get into reading books of the Bible that I would never read. I don't read Leviticus very often. It's just not a favorite book. It's a lot of words and a lot of instructions, and it's difficult for me. But yet there is the same value of truth found in Leviticus as there is in 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. So I invite you over the season of Lent to log into Vanderbilt University's website. You don't have to do anything. You can just go Google Revised Common Lectionary and Vanderbilt. It'll pull it up. And you can do daily readings. You can do readings just on Sunday. You can follow along. But today we will start in Deuteronomy. And this is the Old Testament lesson from today, the first Sunday of Lent. But after this, we're going to read through the Gospels. Because usually, like last year, if you notice, I always change it up. Last year we read through the epistles. The year before that we read through all of the Old Testament. And this year we're going to read through the Gospels as we follow the season of Lent. But today I wanted to start us in Deuteronomy for a reason. To set the stage for what it might look like for us to celebrate Lent together as a church. For the last several years, early on in the life of the church, we declared a fast. Several different times we declared a fast. A fast where we would give up something, generally from a dietary perspective, we would give up something. Then for a few years, we just talked more generally about fasting, like giving up television or giving up something that was occupying our time and giving that time back to the Lord in the way of study and prayer. And then the last few years, we've modified that a little bit more by letting fasting be a place where we give up something, period. It doesn't matter what. But in order to really feast on God's presence, to really be present with God in a variety of ways. This time, I'd like to invite us to think about following up our sermon series on generosity with a different kind of fast, a different kind of giving up for this coming season of Lent. Deuteronomy, starting in chapter 26, in verse 1. This is the instruction that is being given to the people of Israel as they are about ready to go into the promised land. When you have entered the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance and have taken possession of it and settled in it, take some of the first fruits of all that you produce from the soil of the land the Lord your God is giving you, and put them into a basket. Then go to the place your Lord has chosen for you as a dwelling for his name, and say to the priests in the office at the time, I declare today the Lord your God that I have come to the land sworn to our ancestors to give us. And the priest shall take the baskets from your hand and set it down in front of the altar of the Lord your God. And then you shall declare before the Lord your God, my father was a wandering Aramean, and he went down into Egypt, and with a few people lived there and became a great nation, powerful and numerous. But the Egyptians mistreated us and made us suffer, subjecting us to harsh labor. And then we cried out to the Lord, the God of our ancestors. And the Lord heard our voice and saw our misery and our toil and our oppression. And so the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great terror and signs of wonder. He brought us to this place and gave us this land flowing with milk and honey. And now I bring the first fruits of the soil that you, Lord, have given me. Place the basket before the Lord your God and bow down before him. Then you and the Levites and the foreigners residing among you shall rejoice in all of the good things the Lord your God has given you and to your household. This passage has this word or these words, first fruits, that are at the beginning and at the end of this passage. At the beginning, we are invited to bring the first fruits of our labor to the Lord. And we begin there with kind of this idea that when you and I toil, we create something for that toil. Our labor produces something. It gives us something of worth. And we're to bring those first fruits of that labor to the Lord. The first fruits of our labor are the first way that we show to the Lord that what we spend the majority of our time doing is itself a gift. I had a conversation this last week, I had it also this morning, about work. And I love having downtime. I really do. I love having quiet time. But I absolutely love the work that I get to do. I love my work. I love getting up in the morning. I love going to the office. I love the things that I get to do. Now, in part, I've created a job that I get to love because I figured out how to do the things that I love and how to at least make a paycheck doing that. But in part, it is because I love it that it is so joyful for me to go into work. When we spend a lot of the hours of our day doing something, even if it's not something we love, we put a lot of work into the fruits that come from that. For most of us, it's something as simple as a paycheck. We get a paycheck for doing our job. It gives us the ability to buy clothes and food and rent and a mortgage or gas for the car. It gives us the ability to go out to dinner once in a while or go see a movie. It gives us the ability to have a day or a week off when we are still paid, but we're on vacation. It gives us all of those things. And as the people came into the land and they began to live in the land and produce fruit from the soil, they knew that the first thing they needed to do to honor God was to bring those first fruits to the Lord and give them as a gift. Not the seconds, not the thirds, not even what was left over at the end of the harvest. The first fruits of that harvest. Because they knew how important it was that they spent all of this time working hard. They wanted to honor God with those gifts. But these first fruits also, right in the middle of this passage, these first fruits were a reminder of a people that had no fruit before. Of a people that had no land. Of a people that had no country. Of a people who had no place to call their home. A people who had been captive. A people who were under the authority of people who worked them hard. And when they worked hard, all of those were not their fruits. They were the fruits of another. They worked in slavery for generations. Year in and year out, producing things for other people and receiving none of the benefits themselves. They not only offered the first fruits because they knew that this was their labor, they loved what they got to do, and they loved the land that they got to do it in. And so it was a natural outflow to say to God, thank you for everything that you have given me. But they also offered first fruits because they remembered what it was like to be a people who had nothing that was their own. Nothing to give from their own. To live a meager existence. And to live still wandering. What a beautiful phrase. Our forefather was a wandering Aramean. He had no home. You know, the power for us as believers in Christ and as followers of God is that our home is not connected to geography. And in fact, it's a little bit of even our conversation that we had about meeting with other churches. Our identity is not in geography. Our identity is found in the person of Christ. And we, as the covenant loves to say from its history, are a friend of all who fear thee. That's who we are. We are a people who gather together and love together the same Lord. And we live wandering from place to place because this house is not our home. Well, it's the Rayburns' home. And there's probably enough room we could sack out and do an all-nighter here if you're ever interested.
A lock-in.
A lock-in. We could do a lock-in at the Rayburn house. We'll find out who snores. Yes, we already knew. But the beauty of it is it's not about geography. It is about who we are together. And here, this is the first offering when people come and say, we remember when we had nothing to give. And the only thing that drew us together was that we were all children of this wandering Aramean. Our first fruits remind us that there were times when we had nothing. Preparing for the message today, it made me think about this in my own life, that I remember when we really had nothing. I remember there were times in our family when it was just Terry and I. I was managing an apartment because it gave us free rent, and I had to deal with drunk college students day in, night in and night out. And I remember a couple times that it was pretty much potatoes and onions that went into the skillet, and that was dinner. Humbly, I remember one time my wife brought home shrimp that she had gotten because there was somebody at her office that said they were going down to Florida or somewhere and at work, and they said, we'll bring you back some shrimp, and it was inexpensive. We couldn't have afforded shrimp on our budget, but this was cheap. Brought back shrimp. They had to be brine shrimp. They couldn't have been much bigger than this. And they all still had the heads and legs and everything on it. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. How are we even going to eat these things? I was not the most loving husband at that moment. I've apologized for that many times.
Terry's such a saint.
She is a saint. Do you remember when you had nothing? Can you remember those days? And let's face it, even in our nothingness today, can we be honest and say our nothing is still more than others? And so we bring those first fruits remembering the days that we had nothing. We bring those first fruits remembering and recognizing how hard we work and how grateful we are to God. But this passage ends with bringing the first fruits as one more act. And it's this moment that we carry to the Lord the things, because now the language shifts from my labor and my history. But listen to this phrase in verse 9, because he brought us in to this place. He gave us this land flowing with milk and honey. And now I bring the first fruits of the soil to you, Lord, that you have given me. The power of this passage in Deuteronomy is that the writer recognizes that we know we work hard. We know when we had nothing. But we need to remember that from the first thing that comes out of the ground, from the first dollar that comes out of our toil, from the first moment that we receive from our labor, it was never ours in the first place. We no longer are enslaved by Egypt. We no longer are the people who live giving to someone else because they are our overlords. But instead, for the first time, we come offering a gift to the God who has outgiven us in the first place. The joy of this passage is that God has already given us more than we could ever need. And when we come bringing our first fruits to Him, it is bringing them back to Him saying, you have already given even this to us. So for the season of Lent, I would like to invite us to practice giving our first fruits. Now, before you get ready to leave, because you think I'm just going to talk about money, that's not it. Because not all of us have cash to do that with. But we can all recognize our first fruits. So for the next 4 weeks, what I would like to invite us to do is to participate in giving to others in a way that we may find unexpected. I gave this article to the board last week, and or to those that were helping with worship planning last week. And There was an article that I had come across early on when I was doing the series on generosity. So this would have been back in December as I was preparing. And I thought, this is perfect for the season of Lent. And here it is. An opportunity for us to bring our first fruits in four different ways this coming month. First of all, an opportunity for us to bring the first fruits of our own pantries. So my encouragement would be that this next week, I would invite us for the season of Lent to offer our first fruits, to go through the pantries in our house. Or maybe even if we want, we can go pick something up from the store. But to take 10% of that, a tithe of that first fruits of our pantry, and to bring it next Sunday to the church, and all of that food we will take to the Transition Living Program. And we will let those young youth who are figuring things out, we'll take that offering to them and share it with them. Just thinking about the things that we have in our pantry and thinking about the opportunity to joyfully give the first fruits of our labors to another. The next week, I'll encourage us to think about clothing. And I've been talking to Brandon and some others. We're trying to figure out exactly where that would go. But what if we were to go through our closets and tithe the first fruits of our clothing? To take things, and some of these things are things that we probably have in the back of our mind. I might still wear. But knowing that there are others who have nothing. Would we be willing to take the first fruits and share it with another? The third week, I'm going to invite us to take any kind of recreational items that we have. Even for our children, we can teach them and give them an opportunity to tie the toy or something that they would share with a child that doesn't have. Or maybe it would be things that I have found enjoyable myself that I would share with others. To take some items of recreation or perhaps things that we have around our house that we enjoy, but that we would share those first fruits with others. It may be a household item that you enjoy. And then we will in turn take those to Mission Southside because I know that they help families who have nothing in their house. And then finally for Palm Sunday, when we join them, I'll invite us to consider for the season of Lent, what 10% of our income would be for that season. And I'll invite us to participate in giving 10% from our income for the season of Lent as an offering to the Lord, our first fruits. Every week we have our offering box over there, and that's where we share those first fruits. But for this season of Lent, I'm asking you to look at that as an opportunity to consider what it might look like to give 10% from the month that we served, that we worship together for Lent. So that's my proposal for the season of Lent. You, as I always say, you need to find out how do you want to celebrate and to prepare your hearts for the coming of Easter. But I would invite us this next week to look at the first fruits from our pantry. And then each week we'll take another opportunity to do the same. May we be a people that recognizes that God brought us into this land in the first place. And that He is a God that we love. May we share our gifts, our first fruits with Him. Go from here in the spirit of celebrating our first fruits. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.